With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcoming you back to the show this week. And we are 1 week closer to the official start to the season. Still seems like it is a million years away, but sooner or later we'll get there. And as always, there's plenty of news to get to. And as always, before we do that, I hope wherever you are, that you're safe, you're doing well, you're healthy, because it's nasty out there and there's still a lot of bad news out there. But wherever you are, I hope that things are doing well. Anyways, let's get into the news this week and what's happening with Formula One. So we have an official postponement or cancellation for this year. This one's no big surprise, but the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort has been officially canceled for 2020 and will now take place in 2021. This isn't really too much of a surprise, I don't think. It's sort of been off again, off on again for the past several weeks. It sounded like that they were open to trying to host it at some point, but hey, you know, if you want to do it properly and you want to have a proper return to Formula One in your country, then why not do it in the right manner? And who knows what the world's going to look like a year from now. Hopefully it's a lot better than we've been in the past couple of months. And I can completely understand the decision. Anyways, the boss of the circuit there, Jan Lammers, he said in an interview recently, quote, "It looks like our race will be postponed to 2021, hopefully when there's a vaccine and it's business as the new usual," end quote. So, I mean, it is the first Grand Prix since, I think it was 1984 or something like that. And what with, you know, hometown hero Max Verstappen, obviously one of the favorites, not just to win that race, but who knows if Red Bull designs a good car. And Honda certainly has been coming along in leaps and bounds over the past year or two. Who knows? Maybe he's got an outside shot to win a championship. So it's disappointing. I mean, it joins a whole host of other races that have been formally canceled for this year, including my Canadian Grand Prix, although it's on the other side of the country. But that notwithstanding, disappointing to see that Zandvoort and the Dutch Grand Prix won't come back at any time in 2020. So we look forward to that coming back in the spring of next year. Anyways, the British Grand Prix, again, it's been a little up and down in the air, and still anything's far from certain. Last week looked like a real deal was a blow, or a real blow was dealt to Formula One in hopes of having the British Grand Prix go off on back-to-back weekends in July, as was originally planned. What with the UK government's decision not to make any special allowances in regards to isolation and quarantine for anybody coming into the country. I mean, you can understand that, right? I mean, in this day and age, it's all about the health and safety of people. And I mean, it's been bad in the UK. And obviously, you know, if they can get it under control in the next couple of months, they don't want to get back to a situation that even moderately resembles what they've been through. So I can understand the caution there and not wanting to relax things too much. Because if you open one door, how many other doors are you going to have to open down the line? Anyways, Formula One is now reserving the first two weekends of August to hold races at Silverstone if the government quarantine restrictions will actually allow the personnel to travel more freely at that time. I mean, we're going in, it's the end of May right now. I mean, that's still a couple of months away, so who knows? I mean, COVID days are like years. I mean, it's almost, time has really been bizarre over the past couple of months. And we really are kind of going from day to day, week to week. So to look even a couple months down the road really is really is something we can't really know what it's going to look like. Anyway, so the combination that they're looking at could be either July 19th and the 26th, or the 26th and August 2nd are the combinations that have been under consideration. But this introduction of a 14-day quarantine from arrivals into the UK that coming into effect from June 8th obliged F1 to build like what they're calling a safety net and put Silverstone on later. And Hungary would now move into a July slot. I mean, I know last week we talked about it, and this whole calendar that Chase Carey and Liberty are proposing for a Formula One season of 15 to 18 races. Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty fluid. I mean, just considering what's going on in the world at large and the situation as it changes literally on a day and week to week basis. I still think 15 to 18 races would be I think it would be wonderful, but I think it's extremely optimistic, perhaps even a little bit unrealistic. You know, if we can get some sort of season going and if it's safe to do so at some point, I mean, I know that they've been pushing to do it, and they were saying last week that even if they had 10 COVID cases in the paddock, that it wouldn't affect things because they have the proper protocols and the testing that they're going to put into effect once they get going. Sure. I mean, they know more about that, and I'm not even going to try and speculate on it because it's not my area of expertise. But anyways, 15 to 18 races, to me, that seems pretty unrealistic. I would be happy. I would be overjoyed if we could get to 10 by the time that this season gets up and running. And I know that they've talked about going later into the year, into the beginning of next year. If we get 10 races in, I'm more than happy. And I don't really care if they just stick to several circuits. I know that the rules in Formula One state that they have to hit at least three continents to be a true world championship. But extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures, and I'm sure that if it really came to it, that there would be, we'd have to think that there would be some sort of flexibilities in the rules in the teams and with the governing body, and then hopefully, you know, that could actually get sorted out if it did come to that, or a rule change or some sort of special exemption made if they couldn't hit all three continents like they want to. I know that they've got big and grandiose plans, and they think they can pull it off. But who knows? We'll wait and see. So anyways, Holland off, UK, and the British Grand Prix still very much up in the air. Silverstone chief Stuart Pringle said that the later dates are obviously later than the ones that were already discussed as viable ones. Anyways, he had to say, quote, "We've got our original dates that we've been holding and talking into mid to late July, but we've actually got a degree of flexibility through August as well," end quote. So there you go. So certainly not anything from settled. So this is what it looks like at the moment. The provisional European schedule running from July 5th through September 6th would see back-to-back races on July 5th and 12th in Austria, July 19th in Hungary, and then August 2nd and 9 back-to-back race weekends at Silverstone, August 16th at Barcelona, Spa at the end of August, pretty much in its traditional time slot, and then followed by Monza a week later for the Italian Grand Prix. And those two dates still very much in their traditional or recent time slots, as we've seen over the past several years. Okay, so moving along now from to what we don't really know to a little bit more, well, something we know for sure is apparently Williams is considering all or part of their team to secure their future. And this is, I don't know really what to make of this. I find this a little bit concerning because, I mean, this is a team that's really fallen into the abyss over the past several years. I mean, since, after Nico Rosberg left the sport in 2016, 2017, since 2017, I mean, they've just been on a drastic decline. And, you know, I was really hopeful that once they, I mean, they'd, as part of that whole shock retirement of Nico Rosberg, and then the discussions that they had with the Mercedes to bring Valtteri Bottas on board, you know, a part of it was getting Paddy Lowe to come back on the technical side, securing a long-term engine deal. I think they might have even got some cash out of it, if I ever remember correctly. But anyways, I thought that at that point I was feeling, well, you know, maybe, I mean, now it's a little bit easier to go back and speculate, but I thought at the time it was a good move for them. obviously Patty Lowe wasn't the guy that that was needed to, you know, to get that team where they wanted to be. In fact, they went backwards under his you know, during his tenure there. And it's really sad to see. I mean, I grew up in an era, you know, with Nigel Mansell, and then going into the 90s with Prost, and then Damon Hill and Jacques Villeneuve, then Ralph Schumacher, Juan Pablo Montoya. I mean, you know, there were some exciting times, you know, with the Honda engines, Renault engines. I mean, this was a, you know, the team. I was I had a subscription last year to F1 TV, and I went back and I don't remember exactly. I'm pretty sure it was the British Grand Prix in 1986, and it was something else. Nelson Piquet and Nigel Mansell just literally racing away from the rest of the pack with those Williams Honda powered. I think it was the FW11B that year. I mean, just beautiful cars, but it was unreal, and I kid you not. I mean, they were lapping backmarkers with, I think, only within 10 laps of the start of the race. I mean, Formula One, I mean, back in the mid to late 80s, pardon me, was very different than it is now. I mean, even the cars that are slow. I mean, obviously the Williamses are slow compared to everyone else by, you know, a couple to several seconds, but I mean, that it really was different. I mean, even back then, I mean, you had two championships. You had the turbo cars and you had the normally aspirated cars that would compete for like the Jim Clark Championship or Cup or something like that. It was a bit bizarre. I mean, since the rules and the formula have been more standardized in the meantime, has changed things a lot. But still, just the position that Williams finds them in just never ceases just to really disturb me to see where this team has gone. Anyways, the team released a statement this week and said, quote, "The WGPH board is undertaking a review of all various strategic options available to the company. Options being considered include, but are not limited to, raising new capital for the business, a divestment of a minority stake in WGPH, or a divestment of a majority stake in WGPH, including a potential sale of the whole company. Whilst no decisions have been made regarding the optimal outcome yet, to facilitate discussions with interested parties, the company announces the commencement of a formal sale process," end quote. So this is partly to do with the increased pressure that that Williams and, well, many teams in the F1 paddock are facing because of the Formula One shutdown due to the coronavirus pandemic. I mean, this isn't I don't think a real shock. I mean, they've been saying almost right from the get go that they needed to go racing this year. That they needed the income, the revenue that is generated from racing activities, or else they were going to be in very, very difficult waters. And I mean, that came out within the first couple of weeks of the whole cancellations and the shutdowns back in mid to late March, when literally everything, like the entire world, got canceled, literally. So anyways, in that regard, it really isn't too much of a surprise. Still, it seems a little bit surreal to me. The statement does go on to say, quote, "The company is in not receipt of any approaches at this time of this announcement and confirms that it's in preliminary discussions with a small number of parties regarding a potential investment in the company. There can be no certainty that an offer will be made, nor as to terms on which any offer will be made. The WGPH board reserves the right to alter or terminate the process at any time, and if it does so, we'll make an announcement as appropriate. The WGPH board also reserves the right to reject any approach or terminate discussions with any interested party at any time," end quote. So anyways, this comes about on the heels that the Williams Group released their 2019 financial figures. And the numbers weren't good, guys. They had a loss of £13 million compared to a profit in 2018 of almost the exact same. It was £12.9 million. So the group revenue declined to £160.2 million in 2019 from £176.5 million in 2018. F1 revenue declined to £94.5 million from £130.7 million in 2018. And a £10 million loss compared to a profit of £60 million in Formula One the previous year. So, yeah, not good news. But also, this week Williams also announced effective immediately that they've terminated their sponsorship deal with Rocket, which was a bit of a surprise because they had initially signed a deal with them for a couple of years, and I think it was extended to 2023. And yeah, it just they just out of nowhere, and they didn't give any reasons for it, but a tweet from the team said, quote, the financial results for the 2019 season reflect the recent decline in the competitiveness of the F1 operation and the consequent reduction in commercial rights income. The 2020 Formula One season has, of course, been disrupted to the COVID-19 pandemic, and this will have an impact on our commercial rights income this year. The team have also served notice to terminate its relationship with its title partner, Rocket, and major sponsor ROK or Rock Drinks. In common with the many other businesses, we have taken extensive action to mitigate, including a prolonged furlough period for much of our staff. As this awful global crisis recedes, everyone at Williams Racing is looking forward to the start of the new season, end quote. So, yeah, I mean, read between the lines there. I mean, it's obviously got to do with money, but I find it interesting that they're terminating the deal more from their side rather than from the sponsor's side. I mean, it kind of makes you wonder what was said behind closed doors, but it's obviously not as weird as the Rich Energy Haas saga that we had last year. Anyways, Rocket, they're still fully committed to their other sponsorship deals that they have in other areas of motorsports. including the W Series and also the Venturi Formula E team. You would think if it's been terminated on one side with Williams, these sponsorship deals might be up in the air. But a company spokesman for Rocket said in a statement, quote, following their announcement this morning, Rocket would like to take the opportunity to wish Williams well with their plans for a potential sale of the Formula One team. As a group, Rocket remains fully committed to the existing motorship partnerships and the exploration of additional strategic partnerships in the near future, end quote. So yeah, there you go. Obviously, there was more of interest or whatever you want to call it, decision on Williams' side rather than Rocket. Anyways, time for a quick break here on the Overtime Media Network, and don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
All right. Well, welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed here on the Overtime Media Network. So here we go talking about, it's more about money, but rather than a team that's losing money or looking for new investments, we're talking now about Aston Martin. And they've said that they are not going to turn Racing Point into what they call a monster F1 team. Not exactly sure what that is supposed to mean, but anyways, I think it's exciting that despite all this uncertainty that we've seen and during this very disturbing and scary time over the past several months, that the Aston Martin deal has gone through, that Lawrence Stroll and his group, they put more money into the company, and they really seem to be committed to making this really making this a thing in Formula One. I do find it exciting. Anyways, technical chief Andrew Green at Racing Point, he was on the F1 Beyond the Grid podcast this week, and he said, quote, just regarding some of the discussions they had with Lawrence Stroll said, quote, what do you need? What should we be doing? with a view of not becoming one of these big monster Formula One teams. We wanted to try and maintain the efficiency and the size that we currently have, which we felt was a proper sweet spot as far as the team size is concerned. We don't want it to suddenly expand from 450 people to 800-900 people. This was never on the wish list, end quote. Yeah, you know, it is kind of interesting because obviously that is a team going back just a year or so, even to when it was under the previous guys as Force India. This is always a team that's done more with less. And I've said this over the years as well, that they have, they've impressed me over the years. I mean, they're never going to go and win races, but I mean, they're good for points here and there. And you could always tell that despite the limitations that they had in the budgets and the personnel, that they still managed to deliver. And I find that I have some admiration there for them, just the ingenuity and the flexibility and just the, you know, being able to get something done and still have a reasonably competitive team out of it at the end of the day. And they've had some decent drivers. I've got a lot of time for Nico Hülkenberg. Sergio Perez has had his moments in Formula One as well. But I mean, it really, that last year in 2018 when they were still Force India, they really looked like they were on life support. I mean, Vijay Mallya was, he's been since lost his extradition hearing from the UK, and he'll be extradited back to India to face his legal problems there. But you could really tell that team was really struggling in those last months there. And I was really happy to see Lawrence Stroll and his group kind of come in there with the money that they did, and that immediate injection of cash that he brought to the team really made a difference almost instantaneously. Okay, of course they didn't go from kind of struggling in the back half of the pack to going up suddenly competing and fighting for podiums. I mean, nothing of the sort. But you could tell that the money that he brought did make a difference, and it certainly is interesting. Last year was a bit of an in-between year, but this year, this whole pink Mercedes saga, this is going to be interesting, and I think this is one of the storylines that once we actually go green and this season actually gets going at some point, and we all hope that will eventually become the beginning of July at the Red Bull Ring at the Austrian Grand Prix on the July 4th weekend there, and I'm really hoping that that there's something there, because I know a lot has been said about it's raised a lot of eyebrows of this clone of last year's Mercedes W10, but still, I think it's a fascinating storyline for them to borrow and a lot of these concepts and ideas that made the Mercedes so successful last year, and bring that into the design of their car for this year. And I have a feeling that this story, there might be a lot more that might be said and done about it, but certainly that'll be a fascinating one to watch nonetheless. But still interesting to hear Andrew Green just talk about where he feels what is the right size. I mean, still, 450 people for a company, I mean, that seems rather large, but when you're from the outside looking in, that seems like a lot. The company that I work at, we've only got a couple of dozen people on staff, so anything like that seems a lot bigger. But still, I mean, when you look at some of the big teams in Formula One, like Mercedes or Ferrari, I mean, they really do have a small army of people working in their offices and factories and in these teams to design and build and maintain and race these cars. So, I mean, 450 people, I think that seems about the right number. I don't know off the top of my head exactly how many people they have working at a Racing Point at the time being. But still, I mean, that to me seems like a reasonable place to start at under this new life, this new era in their history, and being rebranded as Aston Martin in 2021 and becoming a works team, that it seems like a good place to start. And if the money is there and they're able to work within the budget cap moving forward, and they're able to employ more team and there are more people into the team, and they have the financial means to do so, then that'll be interesting to watch if and when that actually happens. Anyways, Renault, they're going to stay in Formula One despite major cutbacks, and this is interesting because I've kind of been listening to a little bit of that's been said about Renault by Renault themselves over the past couple of months. And, well, this is maybe going back pre-pandemic days, but there seemed to be a couple of hints here and there that I was kind of – I wouldn't say that I was alerted or maybe I'd say alerted to, maybe an admission or a bit of a slip that something was imminent, that they might be thinking of leaving Formula One. But certainly they kind of floated it out there, just a couple of times, just in passing over the past several months, just regarding their long-term plans in Formula One. But anyways, Renault, they've been hit pretty hard by the entire pandemic situation, as a lot of companies and people have, and they're cutting 15,000 jobs from the company worldwide, including 4,500 jobs in France. And this is part of their plan to save over 2 billion. Yeah, you heard that right. 2 billion euros over the next couple of years. Anyways, so there's the big... There's still some fallout from the departure of Carlos Ghosn and his successor, Thierry Bolloré. And that's created a little bit of extra turmoil within the company. And just it's been a difficult time. Anyways, the difference that this reduction in the 2021 cost cap that was officially confirmed by the FIA has allowed all the team owners, investors to get a real clear picture of what they're going to have to spend in the years coming up. I mean, it's going to be initially restricted to $145 million, then dropping to $135 by 2023. So, you know, it's there. So people know what's going on. And I think that that it's good. I mean, Cyril Abiteboul has said that racing is a key part of Renault's brand. I mean, this is a storied company. I mean, they've had success as not just a manufacturer in Formula One and in racing, but also as an engine supplier. I mean, this is a team that, most recently, obviously, I mean, they've had success. Fernando won both his world titles in a Renault. I mean, Renault have powered many cars to world championships, and they've struggled a little bit. I mean, we've talked about it many times over the years since they took over and from Lotus and came back into Formula One full time. And honestly, I never like to see a team leave Formula One. I know that not to put myself in the same same sentence as Bernie Ecclestone, but Bernie was always from the point of view. Well, you know, if you got the money to be here, then you can stay. But you know, if you don't have the money to stay in Formula One, you have to go. Then I'm not going to shed a tear for you. I mean, that's I'm parsing and kind of putting words into Bernie's mouth a little bit, but that is basically the sentiment that he had. I mean, if you can be in Formula One, compete, you know, you're welcome to stay, but don't let the door hit you on the way out if you can't. But for me, maybe I'm just a little bit more sentimental. Maybe I'm a little bit more empathetic about these sort of things. I don't know. Anyways, I don't like to see teams leave Formula One. But certainly when it's a team like a team that has history in the sport, that's why, you know, as I led with the story about Williams and the potential sale, or that they're exploring that, you know, that really, really bothers me, the situation that team is in. And also, I think that it would be not a good thing to see Renault leave Formula One as well. I mean, of course, there's a lot of things that can happen, but certainly I think that, to hear that from some of the brass in Renault themselves, and especially to also hear from Abiteboul that racing in Formula One is, important to the company and that they want to be there. And, I think that's comforting to hear. So hopefully, the situation works and they can stay in Formula One for the long term. And honestly, I'd like to see them improve. This is a team that's done it before, and I'd like to see them see if they can succeed and get back there in the future. Anyways, sticking on the themes of teams sticking in Formula One, Mercedes has what they call clear intention to remain in Formula One under the guidance of current team principal Toto Wolff beyond 2020. So I know I kind of bitch and complain sometimes that it gets a little boring watching Mercedes win race after race and driver's championship and constructor's championship after championship. Formula One wouldn't be the same without them, because, I mean, the job that they have or they've done over the years is nothing short of amazing. And so, I mean, I begrudgingly let them win, I don't let them win, but I do tend to get a little bit frustrated. I like to see more than one driver fighting for races and championships. But I mean, just to do what they've done year after year, not only be a competitive team is one thing, but to be the best team year in, year out. And I mean, it's not all Lewis Hamilton. Let's be fair about that. I mean, Lewis, no disrespect intended, is a fantastic driver. One of the best of, if not the best driver ever. So obviously, he is a big part of that equation. No doubt about it. I don't want to take anything away from Lewis and what he's done with Mercedes. I mean, also extremely impressive what he's done. I've got so much respect and admiration for Lewis Hamilton. That's not it as all, but I think you have a combination of the best driver in the best car in the best team. And I think when you get those these factors lining up, great things are going to happen. I was going to say good things. Good things have happened there, but they've done great things, and they've done it repeatedly since 2014. I mean, 10, 20, 15, or 20, 30 years from now, whatever it is, whenever this current year in Formula One ends, we'll all look back at it in the future and just, that V6 turbo hybrid era, yeah, that was all Mercedes. That was all Lewis. That was all them. It was just amazing how good they were, just not week in, week out, but year in, year out. But, it is good that they have decided to stay in Formula One for the long term under the guidance of Toto Wolff, because there was a little bit of questions whether or not that they might stay in Formula One. And also, there's always the problems that everybody else is facing, what with, the ongoing pandemic and all those issues. But it's good to hear that. And there was a statement that was released from Mercedes earlier this week that said, quote, "Speculation regarding a potential withdrawal from Formula One continues to be unfounded and irresponsible. The sport has taken the right measures to address the consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic and its future financial sustainability, and we welcome these steps. It is our clear intention to continue competing in Formula One as a Mercedes-Benz works team in the years to come, and to do so with our managing partner, Toto Wolff," end quotes. So the key... The two, there's a couple of takeaways from that brief statement. Obviously, they're happy with the moves that Formula One has taken in very quick order, might I add, to secure the future of the sport and get the spending under control in very rapid fashion. But also, it's the last sentence in there. "It is our clear intention to continue competing in Formula One as a Mercedes works, as a Mercedes-Benz works team." That's point number one. "In the years to come," that's point number two that stands out. And then finally, the last part of that sentence, "and to do so with our managing partner, Toto Wolff," end quote. So I think that as long as Toto stays there, they're going to stay in Formula One, should, as long as the desire to be there. It would be interesting, though. I mean, Toto, by no imagination, is old or long in the tooth by any means. I mean, he's just a middle-aged person like so many of us are. But still, it makes you wonder, say, 5 years from now, that maybe he wants to do something else. Is there a future in Formula One? How much is it tied to what Toto wants to do and how long he wants to stay in Formula One? And who would be a suitable successor? That really is the big question. If Toto Wolff was to walk away, would that really affect Mercedes' future decision on to, staying in the sport? Anyways, I'll leave that thought with you for the moment. We're just going to take another quick break here on the Overtime Media Network, so don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
What does Colgate mean by live life to the brightest? Could it be a rich glass of red sipped inside a Parisian cafe on a snowy night when my gaze is met by a tall, mysterious... I mean, brushing as directed with Colgate Optic White Pro Series Toothpaste gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 3 days, so you can live life to the brightest and finish that glass without worrying about teeth stains. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
All right, well, welcome back to the show, and we're going to stick again with the financial side. And McLaren has been in the news this week for some of the wrong reasons, obviously. And they've taken a huge hit financially over the first quarter of 2020, even before the COVID-19 situation kicked in. The McLaren Group revenue fell from, get this, £284 million in the first quarter of 2019 to £109 million. And the company made a loss of £81 million compared to a profit of £22 million in 2019. So most of the drop in income was reduced sales on the automotive side, with sales down from 953 cars down to just 307. So, I mean, two-thirds drop right there. They have a current book order of 993 cars, with 50% representing limited series models with higher margins. So obviously there's going to be more money in those. And then on the racing side, revenue was down for by £4.5 million, that saw so many of these races like Australia, Bahrain, Canada, etc., canceled or postponed, and Formula One's revenue badly hit. So anyways, there's a lot more numbers in there, but we could go kind of keep on going those ad nauseum, but not good for McLaren over the first quarter of 2020. Anyways, going to the rule changes now, the changes on the cost cap limit that's going to come in next year, that's all sorted out, that's been formally approved, and the changes to the regulations to cover the 2020 championship season and beyond, that has been ratified and approved by the World Motorsport Council. And of course, the cost cap limit will be set at $145 million next year, $140 million for 2022, and then will drop to $130 million per year for the next 3 years based on a 21 race season. So it's good to see that that has been taken care of, and it was done in fairly, quick. I mean, it's really been taken care of in the past several weeks, and I think it's very important that it was done. So anyways, also the provision of having what they call closed races without fans has been written in the rules, and the teams are only allowed to bring 80 people to the race, and only 60 of those people can be on the operational side. So the following, and there's a whole list of things, so I'm just going to pull out a couple of highlights here. So some of the technical regulations that have been confirmed is a freezing of a large list of components between 2020 and 2021. And on that list includes chassis, gearbox, a large number of mechanical components and impact structures. And, it's been talked about for a while. A token system has been devised to permit a very limited number of modifications in accordance to the competitor's specific needs. So in 2020, there are going to be limitations to power unit upgrades for 2021, changes to the plan view trim and simplification of the floor ahead of the rear tires in order to moderate the increase of downforce between 2020 and 2021. Minimum mass of the car increased to 749 kilograms for next year. And also a couple of other things on the sporting regulation side for 2020, the provisions for open and closed events and relevant regulatory structure for each, for example, personnel in the paddock, depending on whether such events permit spectators. Also, there's a reduction in aerodynamic testing and the introduction of power unit test bench restrictions for cost reasons. And next year, also a further reduction in aerodynamic testing. So this kind of goes on and on and on, but we could kind of go on. But I think the basic gist of it is, I think it's important that they've got a lot of these things formalized, a lot of them on paper. It doesn't matter if it's on the technical side, the development side. Also, I do think it is interesting that these cost cap numbers are based on a 21 race season. I mean, that's what they were looking at. I mean, we're going to have 22 this year. And I mean, they've even talked seriously. I mean, it's been thrown out there for quite a while now that that they would even like to go up to as many as 25 races per year. Which would, I mean, it'd be pretty awesome. I mean, from a logistical point of view, I mean, it'd be pretty tough to pull that off for a Formula One team. But I know from a fan's point of view that a 25 race season would be fantastic. I mean, you're racing almost half the year. I mean, the season is pretty long. I mean, I remember growing up in an era when there was, what, 16 races per year. I mean, that's still a fairly decent schedule. But you know, the addition of the several additional races that that have been included in the calendar for the last large number of years, I think has been great. I mean, was it in 2018 when we had those back-to-back-to-back races? What was it? France, Britain, and was it Germany? I can't remember back in 2018. That was just awesome. I mean, just you went from one to the other to the other. You had the FIFA World Cup going on at the same time. You had the Tour de France going on. I mean, that was that you know, all the summer sports that you have going on as well. I mean, baseball is in full swing at that time of year. It was a fantastic July a couple of years ago. So from that point of view, I think that would be cool to see again. But you know, if it, you know, based on everything, all the turmoil that we've seen over the past couple of months, if these plans for longer seasons, you know, like 21, you know, or more, you know, that would be wonderful. That would be great for, like I say, from a fan's point of view. But if that gets shelved for the time being, just to keep costs under control and get some more stability back into the sport, then I think that's just fine for me. Anyways, sticking with the budget cap theme here, McLaren believes what they call a, quote, massive and painful task, end quote, of cutting spending and reducing their staff numbers to get under the new budget cap level is unfortunately a price that will have to be paid for the new rules that that they believe at Woking will secure the future of Formula One. McLaren CEO Zak Brown said, quote, Formula One wins today. This is a crucially important moment for our sport. F1 has been financially unsustainable for some time, and inaction would have risked the future of F1 and its participants, who are to be commended for resolving this issue collectively and determinedly. I totally agree. And also, I think that the one thing that that Zak could have added in there in also a very timely manner. I mean, I've said many times over the years that in the past, whenever there was any talks like this, I mean, they were sort of glacial and was a lot of objections, mostly from Ferrari. But I'm glad that in this era, even though it took quite some time to really get an agreement in place for the now postponed development or the evolution of the technical regulations that were going to come out in 2021, it did get done. And I mean, it was mostly behind closed doors. I mean, there wasn't too much airing of grievances in public. And I mean, it did drag out a little bit there towards the end. But I mean, they did get there in the end. And what I find extremely impressive is with this whole budget cap and all these things that that have been done over the past 6 to 8 weeks, I think is, you know, I think that they should be proud of the fact that they were able to get, you know, get over this major hurdle that as a sport collectively they faced as a group of teams and companies, and that they were able to look at the larger picture. And I know that Ferrari was a little bit resistant, but I find it refreshing that the resistance from Ferrari wasn't so much that they were completely appalled by the prospect of having a spending cap or a budget cap, whatever you want to call it, put in place, but it really just came down to a question of the numbers, and even eventually they agreed to that. So I think that is very positive for Formula One. So Günther Steiner, team principal at Haas, says that F1 involvement is now clear-cut for manufacturers. drivers now that these rules changes and spending caps have been put into effect and has been ratified by the World Motorsport Council. And I mean, Haas, this is another team. I mean, even pre-COVID, this was a team that I had a lot of doubts whether or not that they were going to stay in Formula One. I mean, they hadn't said that they were going to pull out, but they've struggled. I mean, I know that they're still a relatively new team, but still, it's been a tough go for them since they came into Formula One. I mean, they've had some bright moments here and there, but last year was not a good year for them. And I think that Gunther Steiner, you know, I think he's come off as one of the stars, obviously in the F1 Drive to Survive series on Netflix. But just in general, I mean, he doesn't really hold back too much. So I think it's really interesting to get his take because I mean, he calls a spade a spade. He's pretty blunt and sometimes quite crude about it. Anyways, he had to say on an interview with Sky Sports F1 this week, quote, "It's a lot more interesting now. We need to push more that we can make in this break-even business, at least going forward. That is one of my jobs to do for Mr. Haas, trying to get to a point where his investments are smaller. For teams coming in, when a budget cap is discussed, there are always some people out there which think they can make money with it. It's still a very expensive sport. You need to invest a lot of money to get somewhere. I think when the good thing is for the manufacturers, if a board of directors see that there is a cap, they know how much they're going to be spending as a maximum. You don't start with a number, and then after 5 years, this number has tripled or quadrupled from where you said a few years before. Now there is a stake in the ground saying that this is the maximum you're allowed to spend by regulation. It's pretty clear cut now, whereas before it was almost how much as a piece of string. How much you want to invest. I think it's a good thing, and hopefully it gets corporates or car manufacturers to invest in Formula One," end quote. Absolutely. Completely agree with what Gunther Steiner has to say. I think that the fact that is that, that you know, corporations and companies and manufacturers will know just going forward how much money is going to be required at a maximum each and every year in the sport rather than knowing, okay, well, we're coming in 2020, we're going to be spending X amount of money and then find the next year that you've got to like double that or significantly up that that amount to remain competitive. So I think that's a very positive thing. And I think some of the reactions that we've seen already from you know, the likes of Haas and McLaren and also, you know, when you hear that other teams like Renault and Mercedes are committing to the long term, I think that's you know, very, very positive and very good news and good developments, especially from the smaller teams. So that's why I was saying earlier that I really hope that that Williams can get their problems sorted out, and if that means of a minority sale or some other way of a new investment, or who even knows, a sale of a majority stake in the team, maybe that's what they need to do. But they can only know that to themselves based on the offers that they have coming forward, you know, before them, and decide what to do with that. Anyways, moving along with this theme of cost cutting, there's also a lot of feeling out there that they've really cut off, you know, what a lot of people are calling an all-out arms race on engine development costs with all the new rules that have come in that will really limit the amount of upgrades that you know, the engine manufacturers can make that are already coming to effect this year. So, Renault team principal Cyril Abiteboul suggested the sometime this week that the levels of expenditure now required to you know, to stay in competitive in Formula One had been too much of a burden. He had to say, quote, "We've been able to push for containing this crazy development race on the engine, and it's really insane what we've been spending on the engine, and finally that's going to change," end quote. So yeah, I mean, you look at, I know that that I've been critical about Renault over the past several years. You know, I mean, they have progressed forward. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I'm not going to give no credit to them at all. I just thought that being Renault, that I thought that the progression might be a little bit quicker. You know, it might have happened a little bit faster for them. No pun intended. But you know, we're only privy to so much, and we can, you know, we can speculate on a lot, but
You know, when you hear even just a little soundbite like that from somebody like Cyril Abiteboul, who's obviously knows the business of his own team and the business of Formula One very well, and the amount of money that's required to put into it, not just to design and build an engine, but to build a competitive one. And then, you know, you get stuck into this vicious cycle that you just have to be, you know, spending more and more money each and every year to try and get more out of the engine. So, very much in the theme of what Günther Steiner was just saying, and in the previous story I was talking about, that you know, he's happy that you know, there's you know, there are certain costs and numbers put in place and these regulations. I think obviously that's being I think Abiteboul will obviously be very agreeable to that as well. I mean, there is a line in the sand now. Well, it's more than a line in the sand. It's a hard cap. You can't go over that. And I think also the you know, the idea and to put that also into the regulations and really limit the amount of upgrades that they can do, you know, that they can make on the engines, will be severely limited. I think that's a positive step for Formula One, because at some point it just does not become sustainable anymore. And when you hear comments like that from Abiteboul and also from Zach Brown, that line was you know, that line of unsustainability, if they hadn't already crossed over it, they were coming awfully close to the edge of the precipice. So again, I'm glad that you know, the reviews and the feedback that we're getting from people inside Formula One on these new rules, regulations, the spending cap, and the you know, the limits that are being put in out there are being met with favorable and agreeable comments. I think that is very positive for the sport. Anyways, time for one more quick break here on the show, and then it's going to be time to start shutting it down for another week. So don't go away. See, I need to get out of here too. I can't even talk anymore. So anyways, don't go away. Be back in just a moment.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
All right, well, welcome back to the show, and just a couple more things here before I let you go. There was a couple more things I was going to talk about, just the on the rules side, and just some of the things that are coming in. So, as previously discussed, there is a token system coming in for teams to you know, teams can use two tokens to modify components on the cars after free dates. What they call freeze dates, and they have three steps that they can take within deadlines that are known as D1, D2, and D3, and they're different cases of you know, frozen components throughout the year. And D1 is the former 5 days after the shutdown, which is when the next week, and for the latter, it's the Wednesday following the third competition of 2020, but no later than the 1st of October 2020. So the FIA has made it very clear that teams should be really sure that they want to deploy their tokens, as there's no second chances if they want to change their mind midstream on a development route that they're taking. But anyways, they will be allowed to revert to their original spec, but they don't get their tokens refunded, if you want to call it that. Anyways, again, I think just building on the theme that we were talking about before the break there, I think just in general, it's very positive. It's very good. And I like all these things that they've been doing. I like the idea of a token system as well. It doesn't completely freeze them out, but I think it really makes the teams really think long and hard about any changes that they want to make, because you only get a couple of shots at it. And if it doesn't work, then, well, you're kind of out of luck. You can go back to your original spec, but you don't get your tokens back. So I think that's a good thing. Anyways, I just want to talk about a couple more things, and it's already starting to get late here. So I'm ready to call it a night here. Anyways, Danny Ricciardo. Yeah, remember Daniel Ricciardo? Yes, the man who's leaving Renault at the end of 2020 to join McLaren has admitted he did hold talks with Ferrari about a move to joining the Scuderia before he announced his move to McLaren for 2021. And I think that is obviously, well, it doesn't really come as a big surprise. I mean, Daniel's one of the top names in Formula One. Maybe his, the shine is taking a little bit of tarnish after last year at Renault. I mean, this year remains to be seen what he does. But he said he admitted in an interview with CNN, quote, "There have been discussions already from a few years back, and that continued all the way through to now. I won't deny that, but obviously it's never really come to fruition. I never really chose to dive too deep into it. Everyone says it would be a good fit, obviously, with my name and all the background stuff, but I try not to get emotionally caught up in any kind of situation." End quote. So, yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. And I'm sure that there's a lot of talking behind the scenes in Formula One at any given time. But I don't know. I think that the fit of Danny Ricciardo going to McLaren, I think that's going to be a good move for him. I still think that it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Sebastian Vettel. I mean, obviously, there are a couple of options there still for him in Formula One. Renault would be one of them. Mercedes is an interesting one. I mean, Bottas isn't confirmed for next year. Neither is Lewis Hamilton, although Hamilton, I mean, you just have to think that's obviously of a question of when and not if. I mean, that would be a real shock if he didn't come back. And you know, the only scenario I could honestly see Lewis Hamilton not going back to Mercedes for 2021 is if Lewis himself decides that that he needs or wants to do something else. I just can't imagine from a point of view of, just having a common goal and seeing eye to eye on the racing side of things. I think that, Lewis and the team, they would be on the same page for that. I can't imagine that it would be money. I can't imagine that obviously money wouldn't be an issue for Mercedes and Daimler, the parent company. I think that Lewis can pretty much demand what he wants, and I think that Mercedes would be able to pay it. But like I say, I mean, I think it really depends now on Lewis himself, how long he wants to keep racing. I mean, he admitted not so long ago that there have been some times that have been tough where it's kind of, difficult to keep going. But, you know, I didn't really see that so much as, an admission of his dedication to the team and to the sport. I think that was just more a, I think it was an admission more of Lewis just keeping it real, just admitting to the fact, sometimes days are tough, some days at work are harder than others. And sometimes you hit a bad patch and sometimes, you just rather be off doing something else. And I think that goes for everyone. Obviously, Lewis has a cooler, more glamorous job than 99.9% of the rest of us. But still, we all have those feelings from time to time that when you get kind of caught in the grind, that you'd rather be off going somewhere. So I don't really really question Lewis's commitment to Formula One or Mercedes. But you never know. He might at the stage he's at now in his career and his life. He doesn't need to do it for the money, whether he wants to do it for the accolades and be the guy on the top of, all the records. That's something only Lewis Hamilton knows, because there's not really too many more that he really needs to get to the top to be the number one guy. I mean, he's a record holder in so many categories in Formula One right now. So who knows? And then finally, Ferrari has announced that they are going to establish an Australian base of operations for their Ferrari Driver Academy. And the Asia Pacific base will be in Sydney, Australia, which is pretty cool. Anyways, the FDA's Asia Pacific arm will be run by Motorsport Australia out of a new center of excellence, which is part of a state government funded $33 million upgrade to Sydney Motorsports Park. So that's very, very cool. Glad to hear that. So Ferrari Driver Academy boss Laurent Mikis had to say, quote, "Today's signing with Motorsport Australia, after the partnerships already established with the Italian Motoring Federation ACI and the karting world powerhouse Tony Kart, is a key step forward in our scouting strategy in order to ensure we continue to secure the best talent of the future. We have a long-standing relationship with our friends at Motorsport Australia, and we trust that together we will build a fantastic fantastic selection program for the region that will inspire and attract many young drivers, end quote. So very cool. Glad to see that in the turmoil that we've seen and experienced over the past couple of months, that there's still positive things going on out there. There's still investment going on in Formula One and in the sport in general. And this was another cool thing to see. Anyways, I really need to get a drink of water or something. For some strange reason, I came into the studio tonight and I didn't bring anything to sip on during the breaks, but that's my own fault. Anyways, guys, thank you very much for downloading and listening to the show. If you want to get in touch, as always, send me a tweet on Twitter at ScuderiaF1Pod or send me an email at ScuderiaPod@gmail.com. And that's it. That's a wrap. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. Have a great weekend. Take care of yourself. Stay healthy, and I'll talk to you soon. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.